Okay, so let's make a start. It's 10:15. Thank you very much to everybody for joining the share. We've got a very interesting topic to discuss today, which I think you'll find enlightening, at least I hope so. I'll try and present it in an organized and structured way, but more about that in a minute. First, I want to just mention that I'll be finishing the share a few minutes early. Mrs. Ozarowski, Zmira Ozarowski, who you probably know if you've ever been involved in the OU Israel Center, is very central to the planning and operations, is going to be making an announcement at the end of the share at about 10:10 about what things are going to be like going forward, how we're going to move into a hybrid platform, which is a mixture of live classes and Zoom classes. So I'm going to stop just a few minutes early for Mrs. Ozarowski to make those announcements. But please stay on for those because they are very important as to how we're going to restructure the way that everybody joins the share from Be'ezrat Hashem, from after Pesach. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I just want to mention our sponsorship. We're very grateful to the anonymous sponsor who has sponsored the shiurim for all of 2021 for an Eliyah for the neshamot of Matityahu ben Yisrael, Aaron ben Menachem Lev, and Eliana bat Yaakov. Thank you. We appreciate that sponsorship enormously. And it should be an Aliyah for their neshamot. Okay, what are we doing today? We are now in the run-up to Pesach. I'm just going to put the sheets again on the chat, so anybody who didn't get them before will be able to get them right now. We are going to be talking today about the rather complicated issue of glassware and kashrus. Anyone who is older than the age of, let's say, 40 or 50, may have recollections of people putting all their crystal glass in the bath before Pesach. I don't know if that means anything to any of you. It's something that you don't see a lot of these days, but people used to do that a lot. Why are they doing that? What are they doing? What on earth does it achieve by putting your crystal in the bath before Pesach for 3 days? And how do we relate to glassware and kashrus on Pesach? This is the first of four topics that I'd like to deal with in the run-up to Pesach. Next week I want to deal, please God, with the issue of Chadash, which is not strictly Pesach related, but very involved in this time of year. Then I want to talk a little bit about the issue of hard and soft matzahs. I want to talk a little bit about Erev Pesach, which falls on Shabbos. But that's all coming up soon. But today we're dealing with glassware. The questions that come up with glassware are these. Do you need separate glassware for Pesach at all? Or can you just wash it and clean it? What about dinner plates? What about Pyrex? Is Pyrex different from regular glass? Is that easier to deal with in kashrus or harder? How do you kashrus glass? And is there a difference between during the year and Pesach? And as I said, why do people put their glasses in the bath? What does that achieve? We'll deal with all of that. And by the end of today's shiur, we should have a much clearer understanding, if we don't already, on what's going on with glass on Pesach. And during the year as well. So let's start from the very beginning. Why is there a mitzvah of kashering? It's not a mitzvah, but how does kashering work? How is that even possible to take something which was not kosher and make it kosher? So if you look in source number one is from the end of Bamidbar, where the Jewish people have fought the battle against the Midianites, and they come back with a lot of booty, with a lot of material that they've taken from the Midianites, and the plates and the pots and the pans need to be somehow kashered or transformed into something the Jews can use. So look at what it says here. Vayomer Elazar HaKohen. So Elazar HaKohen says, El Anshei HaTzavah, to the army people who came back, Habaim LeMilchama, those who went out to the war and have now come back. Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is what the Torah wants you to do. Asher Tziva Hashem El Moshe. Interesting, this is coming from Elazar HaKohen. Ach Et HaZahav, the gold, Ve'et HaKesef, and the silver, Ve'et HaNechoshet, and the bronze, Ve'et HaBarzel, and the iron, Ve'et HaBedil, and the tin, Ve'et HaAforet, and the lead. All of these metals which make up vessels and utensils that you have brought back from the non-Jewish captives. Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, taviru ba'esh. Anything that went through fire, you must put through fire. V'taher, and that will make it pure. Ach b'mein nida yitchata, it has to go also into the main nida. What is the main nida? Main nida is a mikveh. Why would it have to go to a mikveh? So there's a double extra issue here, apart from kashrus, which is number one, tvilas kelim, toiveling the kelim, which we're not talking about now, but we had three shiurim on tvilas kelim back about a year and a half ago, and I brought you at the bottom of the sheet here a reference to where you can find those shiurim on toiveling on tvilas kelim. Also, of course, mei nidah means they have to be purified because they're tameh from being in contact with dead bodies or a non-Jew or anything else that's made them tameh. That has to be done to them. Obviously not relevant today. So anything that went through fire has to go through fire. V'chal asher lo yavor ba'esh, and anything that didn't go through fire, taviru b'mayim, has to be passed through water. What exactly is going on here? What is the Torah talking about when it's saying that we have to put vessels through fire and vessels through water? Is it tefillah? Is it kashrus? Is it mikvah for tumat maid? What is going on here? So have a look in Rashi in the Ramban. Let's just get a basis of our understanding here. Rashi explains as follows. Number two, kol asher yavor ba'esh, everything that was put through fire. Levashel bo klum, anything that was used to cook with, it was used hot. It's a pan that was used hot by these non-Jewish people with non-kosher food. Taviru be'esh, you have to pass it through fire. Kederech tashmisho ha'agalasa, the way it became traced, the way it was used, is the way that you kasher it. This is the beginning of a fundamental process in kasheras. Kabolo kach palto, the way it absorbed non-kosher, or we see meat or milk or chametz, is the way that you get it out. So anything that was used with fire has to be with fire. Mashatishmishu al yidei chamim, something was used on the flame, yagil and b'chamim, or on the heat, has to be put through a process of hagala on the heat. Uma shetashmishu ayidei tzli, something was used directly on the fire, like a barbecue grill, or something which was roasted, kagoin shavud, like a skewer, aschala, or an askala, or a frying pan, yilbenenu ba'or, has to be also passed through fire. So if it was used directly on the fire, it has to be blowtorched, it has to be put through liver, we'll see what that is, and if it was used on the flame, but in liquid, it just has to be passed through liquid on the flame. V'chol asher lo yavor ba'esh, anything that was not used hot, says Rashi, kol davar she'ein tashmishu alidei ha'or, things that we just use cold, kagoin, kosot, like drinking glasses, sluchiot, or plates, shetashmishu betzoinen, which is used cold rather than hot, v'lo bal'u iser, and they didn't absorb anything on the heat from the non-Jewish use, taviru b'mayim, what does it mean passed them through water? Rashi's understanding is, matbila, just toivel them. Vadayo, and that's enough. Vadafka kli matchos. And that's only metal things that need tefillah, because earthenware doesn't need tefillah, and glass we're not dealing with in tefillah today. So Rashi's understanding of the posik is, anything that passed through fire, either was boiled upon a flame, has to be then kashered by boiling on a flame, was put directly, roasted on a flame, ditto, kashered by roasting on a flame, and everything that was just used cold, doesn't need anything. It just needs to be toiveled and you're good to go, and that's fine. Ramban has one point of difference with Rashi. He brings Rashi's commentary there. He says, he quotes the first line, kol davar she'ein tashmishu al yidei ha'or, kagon kosot, sluchiot, kitonot, cups, saucers, cold things, shetashmishu betzonen, loy balu isser, taviru b'mayim. Rashi says, masbilen v'yadayu, that's just tefillah. Losh and Rashi says, the Ramban, ve'einu nachon ve'einai. I don't think that's correct. It doesn't just mean toivel, things that we use cold. She'ein loshen ta'aviru tefillah. It doesn't sound like that's tefillah. Tefillah, you wouldn't use the word ta'aviru, pass them through water. Ki haya ome taviru b'mayim. You'd have said, bring them into water. Shehu loshen ha'tefillah. That's what you normally say for tefillah. So what does he mean in his opinion? How do you kasher cold things, things that were never used on the heat? Aval perish, what does it mean ta'aviru b'mayim? L'chavtam, you have to really wash them, wash the dishes really well, u'l'shashfeh, and you have to scrub them, b'mayim, in water, yafa, really well, achitasur chaluda, until you get off any grease or grime or non-kosher food that's stuck on the sides, we'll see about that soon, shenitzaka mehem, which is stuck to the plates, min ha'isa, anything that could be otter, shenishtamish behem, they were useful for zeu hefsherim min ha'isa. So it's not really that the Ramban and Rashi disagree fundamentally, it's just that Rashi understands put them through water means mikvah, means tefillah, a keli mikvah, and Ramban says, he doesn't disagree with that, he just says, no, put them through water means you have to really scrub them well. So what do we get from there? We get from there that basically the way you kasher anything is the way it was used. If it was used on the grill, you have to use a heat source, direct libun, some kind of flame, to kasher them. If it was used on the stove in water with liquid, you have to use kind of liquid kashering, which we call hagala. If it was used cold, they don't really need kashering at all. They just need scrubbing and making sure that none of the non-kosher food is stuck to them. And that's what I've given you on page 2. This you already know, I'm sure. A little summary of how kashering vessels works. Whether you need liban gomor, which you would need for a barbecue grill or a frying pan, something like that was placed on the fire. And that you do through a blowtorch, or through some kind of libun gomor. You could have a self-cleaning cycle in an oven. If you have a pyrolytic oven, then that will also be considered libun gomor. You don't have to wait 24 hours before you do it, because it literally burns off anything that could be on the vessel from the non-kosher or chometz or whatever use. Then there's libun kal, which is a lower form of libun with heat. It doesn't have to glow, it doesn't have to get red hot, but it just has to be heated up to its maximum heat. I'm not getting into how we kasher ovens now, it's a separate topic, but that's one of the things that we do. Hagala, I'm sure everybody's familiar with. Anything that was used on a range or a stove to cook with liquid needs to be kashered the same way. You boil up a pan of water, and you've seen before Pesach the big vats of water that people boil up, and they drop the kalim into them, because again, these kalim weren't used directly on the flame, but they were used to heat water, etc. You can kasher that in your kitchen, just get a big pot and boil it till the water's bubbling, and then put the vessel in that you need to kasher. It doesn't need to go in all at the same time. It's not like tefillas kalim. When you toivel the kalim, they have to be all immersed together. When you kasher them, you can do one half and then the other half, and you can turn it all around. So that's hagala, and then the minag is that we rinse it off in cold water after we take it out of the hot. And then finally, there's another way that you can kasher sometimes by what's called irui, pouring from a kli rishon. Again, the same idea. Whichever way it became treif, or chometz, or meat, or milk, whatever you're trying to kasher, that's the way you get it out. So if chometz poured into your sink, it wasn't cooked in the sink, it just poured into the sink. So the way you kasher the sink is by pouring hot water into the sink. The way you came in is the way you get it out, and there are other details as to how to keep the water hot, etc. Fine. That's all, I'm sure, familiar with many people, most people, if not all people here, the different ways of kashering, libun, libun kal, libun gomor, hagala, and irui from a kli sheni. What kind of materials can be kashered? And then we'll get into glass. So not every material can be kashered. We saw from the verse, from the pasuk, that metal can certainly be kashered, but not only metal. Stone can be kashered, wood can be kashered, natural rubber can be kashered, but some things cannot be kashered. And the main issue that cannot be kashered, the main material, is earthenware. It's very clear from the halachic discussions from the Torah and from the Gemara that cheres, kli cheres, earthenware, which would be also enamel or china or ceramic, cannot be kashered. It can absorb non-kosher taste or treif or chometz or whatever, meat, milk, but you can never get it out. So there is no way to kasher a china plate, there's no way to kasher an earthenware vessel, it's just not a process that will ever work. What is the situation with glass? Because the Torah never mentions glass, and the Gemara, that does talk about glass, we'll see where, never mentions glass in the context of kashrus. And that's what makes it so interesting. Glass is talked about in the Gemara, but not in terms of how you kosher it. And therefore, that's what's going to cause this debate, which is so fascinating in the post-gim and the different practices that we have today. Let's just ask where glass comes in the Tanakh. Historically, glass making dates back already to the time of the third millennium BCE. People were making glass in Mesopotamia, in Egypt, but they were making it for beads. They were making it as precious stones. In fact, the only mention of the word zechuchit, which is glass, in Tanakh is in Iyov. I brought you the mention. I didn't bring you the pasuk. It's in Iyov 28:17, where it talks about zechuchit as being like a precious stone, which is even more precious than gold. In the ancient world, glass was not used for food utensils until the Hellenist period, until the second temple period, and therefore it's no surprise that it's not mentioned in the Torah, but it is mentioned in the Mishnah and the Talmud in many different contexts, but not in the context of kashrus. So let's now ask a little bit, what is glass, how is glass made, and what exactly is going on? Plastic, we'll get to. Someone asked plastic, we will get to plastic, have no fear. How is glass made? So I'm not a glass maker, although I've been to, you know, glass blowing kind of demonstrations, as I'm sure most people have. But basically what you do to make glass is you take a few raw materials. Here I've given you a list of them. Silica, silicon oxide, dioxide, sodium oxide from soda, calcium oxide from limestone, dolomite, which is a magnesium oxide compound, and feldspar, which is an aluminium oxide compound. And you put them all into a furnace, you boil it up until it's completely molten, and then there are different ways of making the glass afterwards. One way of making glass is you move it over another molten metal until it becomes flat and spread out in that way to make plate glass, and then you cool it and you cut it. But you can see here that glass is made from compounds that all come from the ground. Sand, soda, limestone, dolomite, etc. And this is going to be very important. It's made from compounds from the ground, but it's smelted and formed in the same kind of way that metal is. Now, metal, of course, also comes from the ground, but in a very different way. Metal comes from ore, which has to be purified and then has to be smelted. So this is going to cause us some debate as to what is exactly the status of glass in halacha. Is it like earthenware, in the sense that it comes from the ground and it's made like china? Or is it like metal, in the sense that it's smelted and reformed in a way that you can't do with china and you can't do with earthenware? So let's have a look at this now. There are, in fact, three main sources in the Gemara that deal with glass. But they don't talk about kashrus, they deal with it in another context. So let's look through these now. Remember this, because this is going to help us to work out what the halacha is later on. The approach number one, which is source four here, is talking about tfilat kelim, going to the mikveh with your kelim. By the way, why do we toivel our kelim? We talked about this in the shir back when, and one of the main approaches to toiveling the kelim is you're kind of putting through a conversion process. A non-Jewish pan is used for non-Jewish purposes, eating in a non-Jewish way. A Jewish pan is used for eating for mitzvahs, eating for haknasas orchem, and therefore you can't just use a non-Jewish pan without converting it somehow to say, this is my Jewish pan now. That is actually an idea that resonates through the poskim. There are other ideas of what tefillah is, but the kind of conversion is one of the main ones. But we're not talking about tefillah directly, but this source in number four is. Have a look here in number four. The last Mishnah in Avodah Zorah deals with kashrus and tefillah. If you buy a used pan or pot, whatever, from a non-Jew, anything that normally was just washed in water, used cold, you have to do that. Lahagil, if it was used hot, yagil, then you have to kasher it hot. Lalabin ba'or, if it was used on the fire, yilabin ba'or. We just looked at this. It just says whatever use it had, that's how you kasher it. Hashufud, so for example, a skewer or a spit. The ha'askala and a frying pan. Malavim ba'or, you have to kasher them with a blowtorch on the fire. Hasakin and a knife that's used to cut greasy material. Shafa, you have to scrub it really well. The hitaira, and that's what you need to do for a knife. Many people, of course, will be familiar with the old stick the knife in the plant pot and magically it becomes kosher. I'm afraid to break it to you that sticking your knives in the plant pot doesn't do anything for them, and they won't grow either. The point is that you are meant to stick it in something abrasive, like stony sand, whatever, to really scrub the grease off. And of course, these days when we have other scouring pads and things like that and detergents, you don't need to try it in the plant pot. You're probably better off not doing that, unless you enjoy putting knives in the plant pot, in which case I don't want to spoil your fun. But it doesn't do anything kashrus-wise. So fine, so that's how you kasher things. Says the Gemara, Tanava Kulan, and all of these, Tzrikin Tzvila, they all need to be toiveled as well, don't forget that. Bar Basayin, in a mikveh. Now, here's the glass input. Amar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says the following. Hani Kli Zechuchit, what about glass vessels, bowls, cups, things like that? Hoyel Vaki Nishbaru, since when you, Nishtabru, when they break, Yesh Lehem Takana, you can fix them again. You can remelt them. Kakli matchos damu, they are like metal vessels, Rashi explains. Shenishtabar, if it breaks, ra'oi lahaticho, you can smelt it down, la'asotakli, and remake it into a vessel. So this source here in Avodah Zarah says, glass is like metal, for the purposes of tefillah. But glass is like metal. Okay, fine. Next source, the Gemara in Shabbos. This source is going to say something completely different. In number five, the Gemara says the following. Please hook is my timer gazel behem rabbanon tumah. Why are glass vessels subject to tumah? How can they become tame? If they were touched by a person who touched a dead body or a dead a reptile or a nida, zava, whatever was in the system of tumah, why does glass become tame? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan answers in the name of Rabbi Reish Lakish. Hoyo v'tchilas briyasam min hachol. Since glass is made from sand, okay, Shavin Rabbanu le Klicheres. So we basically say that the glassware is effectively like Klicheres. Glassware is sand. It's like earthenware. So for the purposes of Tumah, we compare glass to earthenware. So now we've got a problem. Because For the purposes of tefillah, we said glass is like metal. For the purposes of tumah, we said glass is like earthenware. So that's going to have a massive impact for kashrus. If it's like metal, then it can become kosher, come treif, and I can kasher it. Metal can pick up treif taste, and I can get it out again. If it's like earthenware, it can pick up taste, but I can't get it out again. So which is it? Is it like this or is it like that? I'm not going to read 6 and 7 inside. 6 and 7 is the Me'iri. He explains that Chazal didn't quite know what to do with glass, so they gave it the stringencies of both sides. On the one hand, it's like metal, so you have to take it to the mikveh, on a rabbinic level, certainly. And on the other hand, it's like sand, so we're concerned that it might become tameh. So again, what does this mean for us in terms of kashrus? Is it like metal? Can we kasher it? Or is it really like sand, like earthenware, and can we not kasher it? The last approach, this is the third, is in Avos Rebbe Nosson. What is Avos Rebbe Nosson? Avos Rebbe Nosson is like a parallel midrash on Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot obviously is part of the Mishnah, and in the time of the Gaonim, they put together a kind of more like a Tosefta type arrangement, a Mishnah commentary parallel to that Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which is called Avot de Rebbe Nosson. Now, as you're probably already thinking, gosh, this is Pirkei Avos material. Is this halacha? Do we learn halacha from Pirkei Avos? Not normally. We normally learn midot, how to be a mensch, and etc. But we don't normally learn halacha. But look at what it says. Number 8. It says, Avos de Rebbe Nosson. Shloisha dvarim nemru b'chli tzchuchit. There are three things that are said about glass. What are these three things? Number 1. Eino bolea, ve'eino polet. It doesn't absorb, and it doesn't exude. It's completely impervious. Nothing goes in, nothing comes out. Number 1. Ma'are kol mashe b'tocho. It's transparent so you can see things that are in it. That's what we call glass. If it's not transparent, maybe it's not glass. I'm not getting into that now. Obviously, you can have non-transparent glass, but it says here you can see through it. And thirdly, b'mokon cham, it's like an insulator. If you put hot things in it, it keeps them hot. B'mokon silin, if you put cold things in it, it keeps them cold. Silin. Now, what do I get from that? It seems from that source that glass is perfect. It doesn't absorb. You don't need to kasher it because nothing ever went in. It's completely smooth. It doesn't absorb. Nothing comes in. Nothing comes out. And therefore, it's going to be neutral for kasherus. You're never going to have to do anything with it. Just give it a wash and it'll be fine. But then we said these other things about glass. It keeps things hard. It keeps things cold. Is this halachic or is this some kind of a midrash material? Okay, so that's really what we have in the works of Chazal. On the one hand, we have a Gemara that says, since you can smelt it, since you can melt it down and fix it, it's like metal. Then we have another Gemara that says, since it's made from sand, it's like earthenware. Then we have another Gemara, Avos de Rebbe Nosson, that says, it's sui generis. It just does its own thing. It's not like metal. It's not like sand. It's completely different. It doesn't absorb and it doesn't need kashering, and that's fine. Which of these are we going to paskin like in terms of the halacha? So let's have a look now. Let's have a look. There are basically four approaches in the Rishonim as to how we do this. And we'll see soon, this will turn into the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll see what the Sfaradim do, and we'll see what the Ashkenazim do. But there are four approaches in the Rishonim. Let's go through these in turn so that we understand how this works. Somebody asked me here, does ceramic items need toibling? Do ceramic items need toibling? The answer is, that is a debate. China plates, some people say they do not need toibling at all because they're basically earthenware. Other people say because of the glaze on the China plates, one should toibble them, but without a brocha. So some people don't toibble their China plates. Some people do toibble their China plates, but without a brocha. And that's the deal with tefillah, but I'm not getting, I refer you to the other, shirim that I mentioned at the beginning. Fine. Let's have a look at these four approaches in the Rishonim. Number 9. The first approach is that glass is unique, following this source in Avot de Rebbe Nosson, which is glass is perfect. It doesn't become treif. It doesn't become meaty. It doesn't become milky. It doesn't become chometz. It doesn't do anything. And therefore, you never need to kasher it at all. Just wash it out and just use it again for whatever you like. Let's see who says this. Number 9. First of all, Tosfos. Kli zchuchit shalem. If you have a whole glass vessel, meaning it's not got cracks, it's not got imperfections which can get trap food, lo bole. It doesn't absorb at all. Tosfos. Similarly, we see the Ravya, number 10. Ravya was one of the very important Balia Tosfos in Ashkenaz. Ravya says as follows, the kli zchuchit shia. It's smooth. Glass is very smooth. The loin bala, it doesn't absorb at all. Kedamrin and Gabilade, like we see with the heart. The heart, as an organ, is also very smooth, and there's a debate in kashras as to whether the heart absorbs or doesn't absorb, how you kasher a heart. Not getting into that. Now, if you go for your Mu'rav Yerushalmi, your Jerusalem mixed grill, then you'll get your hearts in there as well. One of the most important things, by the way, in a restaurant, if they serve you your Mu'rav Yerushalmi, Jerusalem mixed grill, never ask what's inside it. Because if you do, you'll never eat it, and you'll never eat anything again. That's my recommendation, but just eat it and be happy. And check the hechsher, but don't ask what's in it, because you don't want to know. Okay, fine. But glass is smooth. Varaya, Me'avad Rabbi Nathan, and he quotes this Mishnah, this Gemara, and Avad Rabbi Nathan, Shlosh Dvarim Neru B'Kli Cheres, and it has a slightly different version, three things we said about earthenware, the Shlosh B'Kli Suchis, Kli Cheres Boleo Maflit, Kli Cheres does absorb taste, etc., and Kli Zchuchit does not. Fine. And this is if you like, encapsulated in a very short tshuva by the Rashba. The Rashba was in Spain. So here you see Ashkenazim and Sephardim saying this. Tosfos is Ashkenazi, Rashba is Sephardi. He says, number 11, Masha sha'alta b'kli tzuchit. You asked me a shayla about glassware. Shenishtamish behem b'chamin. It was used hot. It was used in an oven. It was used for hot tray for hot meat or milk or whatever. In tzrichim shum hechsher. Does it need any kashering afterwards? The Timasha Amru b'perik ha'achron shal Abba de Rabbi Nathan. He quotes, it says in the at the end of Abba de Rabbi Nathan, Tanya, kli tzuchit einu bolim v'ein poltim. Here's my answer. So he says, tshuva, this is the whole tshuva. It's a very short, four-line tshuva. Response, he says, Kein nireh pashut, it seems absolutely clear to me, she'ein tzrichim shum hechsher. It doesn't need anything. Just wash it out, and you're good to go. Number one, chada d'she'i tuva. You can see it's very smooth. It doesn't absorb anything. V'chol d'she'i tuva leit lo bar katufei. It doesn't have any cracks in it. Mashma d'lo bala, so it will never absorb. It's not like earthenware. The oid, and furthermore, the chazi lehu, we can see with our own eyes, the loin midaisi, it doesn't sweat, it doesn't exude anything, glass is impervious to anything else. And therefore he says we see, not only based on sources, but based on science, the glassware is, it doesn't absorb, you don't need to kasher it, there's no problem whatsoever. Now this actually, let's just talk about this for a couple of minutes. What's going on here? Is kasher based on science, or is kasher based on halacha? And do the two things jive together in any way? Meaning, if I do a test in a lab, you tell me this bowl was just used for a meat stew and I've washed it out, hot, for meat. And I take it to a lab and I do testing on it, and I find, well, there are no molecules from the food there. I've looked, I've tested the metal, I've tested the earth. So does that change the halacha or not? So on a certain level, the answer is no. Halacha is a din. It's not about the metziyut. It's not about what's actually there necessarily. But it's a halacha, this has a din of meaty, a din of milky, so we can't just go running to a lab to test things, that's not necessarily going to be the answer. On the other hand, the halacha is formulated based on, you saw from the Rashba here, some kind of observation. This raises a very interesting question, which Rav Eliezer Melamed got into some hot water, no pun intended, about five or six years ago, when he said, look, stainless steel today is just as smooth as glass. Maybe it doesn't absorb at all. So that's a very radical thing to say. Does that mean I don't have to have separate meat, milk, stainless steel pans? How does that work? We'll deal with Corel a little bit later. We'll see. Well, Corel is on the sheet. Rav Melamed says, for example, he doesn't say you don't have to have separate meat and milk. He says you do. But he does go so far as to say that we see clearly that a clean stainless steel pot is totally clean. He says back in the day, there was a film of grease or grime that you just couldn't get off the pots unless you put them into boiling hot water. So he's looking at it really from almost like an empirical point of view. So you couldn't wash that grease off. You couldn't scrub it off. Boiling water gets it off. Today, with detergents and soaps and the material of stainless steel, you can get it off. And therefore, Rav Melamed, and most poskim do not agree with this, Rav Melamed says that if you used a stainless steel pot for meat or for milk or for treif, and it was used again, even within 24 hours, as long as it's clean, then the food that you cooked in it, b'dieved, after the fact, is still kosher. Now that's quite a radical fact, but that's based on this debate as to what is exactly the issue here in terms of in terms of the smoothness of the material and whether that impacts on the halacha. I've referred you in the footnotes there to an article in English by Rav Melamed where he goes through exactly how he gets to this and his conclusions. So I just wanted to raise that there because that is actually very interesting and very important. But okay, opinion number one, glass is completely impervious. You can use it for milchiks, then you can wash it down, use it for fleishiks, you can use it for Pesach, you can take it from a tray, use straight away. It just has to be clean. That's approach number one. Approach number two, number 12, that glass is like earthenware. Say these, Meforshim, that basically glass is the worst of all situations. It absorbs, and you can't kasher it. This is the opposite extreme. Have a look in the Mordechai here, number 12. Rabbeinu Yechiel miParis. He quotes Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris, also Ashkenazi Tosfos. He would rule as follows. These drinking glasses, he's talking about Pesach here, that you use for a chometz use. I just got a little message that my internet was a bit unstable. I just want to check. Can you still hear me? Thumbs up or thumbs down? Thumbs up? Okay, I got a little internet glitch there. Don't use them for Pesach, he said. I feel like iru. You can't even kasher them. Don't try and kasher your glassware. Mishum Dahavik Klicheres said, just like earthenware. Hoyvat Chilas Briyasa Minachol. He goes like the Gemara says, they're made from sand. The Hatoyra Heida, a Klicheres, the Torah makes it very clear when it comes to earthenware. She'ein Yotzimidei Goitna La'olam. You can never get the taste out. The Afa Gav the Tashmish Betonin. And even if you use it cold, you're going to tell me, well, it's just drinking glasses. I never really used them hot. I'm not happy, he says. Because Makam Shorim Behem Petitim Shel Lechem Cham. People put hot bits of bread into their cups by Yain. I don't know if that was a delicacy, bits of hot bread in your wine. Doesn't sound to me particularly appetizing, but who am I to judge? From the Middle Ages, maybe this was a delicacy. The havi kamavush, also you store stuff in it, we'll see that in a minute. If you store cold liquids for 24 hours, that also imbues taste, at least on a rabbinic level. And therefore he says glass is the worst of all worlds. The first source said, the first approach is glass is the best of all worlds. Here the glass is the worst. It's like earthenware, it can get trace and you cannot Kasher it. The Smag brings basically the same idea. I'm not going to read it inside now because we want to make sure that we get through the material. But basically, according to this, there's nothing you can do with glass. It's completely different in that sense, and therefore you can't kasher it. It's like earthenware. It's not like metal. And I brought you some of the reasons why that might be the case. What about that Gemara, that the Mishnah in or the Braita in Avodah Rabbi Natan? He says, no, that's Midrashic. Three properties of glass. It's not really talking about halacha. It's not part of the kashrus material, and therefore we're not too worried about that. By the way, someone asked about plastic. What's the deal with plastic? Can you kasher plastic? And do you need to toivel plastic? So if we go with the idea that glass is like metal because you can melt it and reform it, so then plastic also, by logical extension, you should be able to melt it and then reform it. You can do that with plastic. Most poskim say that plastic does not require tefillah, because tefillah kalim doesn't need to be toivel. Because glass had a special din, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman understood glass was just a one-off din, rabbinically it needs toiveling. Plastic doesn't need toiveling. However, others, the Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, he said that plastic does need toiveling. That's quite a big deal to toivel all your plastic utensils without a brocha, but that's not the common minhag. We do not toivel plastic. As far as kashrus is concerned, many poskim say you can kasher plastic, but I'm not getting into that now. Let's just stick with glass. So we've had one approach which says no need to kasher it. It's great. Another approach that says there's nothing you can do. You can't kasher it. A third approach. Yes, it absorbs, but you can kasher it in certain circumstances. It's like metal. Have a look here. This is very important because we'll see this impact on the Ashkenazi Pesach. Number 14. Says the Or Zeruah, Klis chukit kekli matchos. The glass is like metal. Le'inyas tzrichim tefillah, for all the purposes of tefillah. We saw that. Ki'itim perik bashad avodah zarah. He goes with the Gemara in avodah zarah. Niri lahavi raya, and I want to bring you a proof. She'im nishdamish vahem iser cham. If you cooked hot chometz, let's say, or hot treif in a glass, okay, shidah lahem b'hagala. You can just put them through a hagala. You can just put them in hot water, and you can kasher them like metal. Even though there is a Gemara that says, well, they're more like earthenware. Hanimilin in Tumah is nothing to do with us. That's to do with Tumah and Tara. But in Hagala, when it comes to kashering, yesh lilmoid mikli maschos. I prefer to connect it with metal. Why? Logically. She'anu medamim lahem oisam le'inyan tefila detara mitara adifa. Okay, because it's better to learn a tara from a tara. Meaning, what am I going to compare glass to? Am I going to compare it to metal because of tefila? Or am I going to compare it to cheres, to earthenware, because of tumah? And he says it makes much more sense to compare kashrus and tefila because they're both purification processes. So it's much more logical to compare glass to metal than to compare glass to earthenware, and for that reason, you can kasher glass. With one caveat, and this is the critical one, comes along the Ritva and quotes the Ra'ah, lots of sources today. The Ra'ah is Rav Aaron Halevi, one of the very important Sephardi poskim, perhaps the author of the Sefer HaChinuch, that's a debate, but here he quotes the Ra'ah, number 15, If you use glass for hot, prohibited, whatever it is, chametz, meat, milk, you can kasher it, because it's like metal. Because it's like metal, just like it needs tefila. If you buy something from a non-Jew. Now, look at this. Mikol makam, even though it could be kashered, we're worried. Why? Ika lemechush, we need to be concerned. The chayes aleihem, people are not going to kasher it properly. People are worried about putting their glass in boiling water. Dil mapaki, because it might crack, it might break. The loisherina le lechatchila lehagila, they won't kasher it properly. They'll be scared. They won't put it in the water. The water won't be hot enough. It won't be boiling. The harihein asurim, and then they'll still be after afila l'tzayin, and even for cold, shemi yishtamish behem chami, in case you use them for hot, etc. What's going on here? This third approach says, look, glass is like metal. In theory, it picks up treif, and you can kasher it, but we're worried, because people might not kasher it properly. And if you don't kasher it properly, then it'll still remain in its original state. Why won't they kasher it properly? Because they're scared. They're scared to pour boiling water over glass. They're scared to drop it into water. But in principle, it does work if you try to kasher it, but you just shouldn't do it because we're worried you won't do it properly. Then there's another approach that we're just not sure what glass is. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Not getting into that now. But when we get into Shulchan Aruch now, we'll see that, just let's summarize what we've done so far so we understand it clearly. There are basically four approaches in the Rishonim as to what to do with glass. Number one, glass doesn't need kashering. It's fine. It doesn't absorb. Number two, glass does absorb and you can't kasher it. Okay? Like earthenware. Number three, glass is like metal and you can kasher it. But we are worried that you might not kasher it properly. But in theory, you can kasher it. Okay, fine. Let's have a look at what this means, halacha l'maisa. In practical terms. So what do you do? Interestingly, the Shulchan Aruch brings the dinim of glass in Hilchas Pesach. Not in Hilchas Kashrus and Yoredeh. He brings it in Aruch Chaim in Hilchas Pesach. And this is why it's all the more interesting to us right now. So let's have a look. Here we're getting to the bottom line. Says the Shulchan Aruch as follows. Number 17. Kli tzchuchit afilu machnisa nekiyam. Even if you have glass vessels which you use to store chometz. He's talking about chometz here. You keep, you know, whiskey in them for months and months. Afilu mishtam behem chamen. Even if you use them hot. Glass vessels which are used for storage, which are used for heat. Ein tzrichim shum hechsher she'einu bolim. They don't need any kashering at all because they don't absorb. U'b'shtifa ba'alma, just wash them out. Sagilehu, and that's enough. Says Rav Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch, the glass, he follows the view that follows the Avos de Rebbe Nosson, the glass is completely impervious. It doesn't need kashering. You can just wash out your glassware from chometz and use it for Pesach. Not just your cups, but even your bowls, your Pyrex dishes, you don't need to kasher them, and you don't need to buy new ones for Pesach, says the Rebbe Chava, because they don't absorb. Just make sure they're clean, and everything's fine. You certainly don't need different ones for Milchiks and Fleishiks, because glass will not absorb, and it doesn't need kashering. Really easy. Comes along the Ramah, for Ashkenazim, number 18, and says, V'yesh machmirim, but for us, we're more machmir. We're more stringent, we're stricter. But when we say the klis chukid afilu hagala loy mahani luhu, that you can't even kasher it. Not only does it need kashering, but you can't kasher it. So chena minag ba'ashkenaz, we need to say, this is the minag in Ashkenaz. Now here's the $64,000 question. For the Sfaradim, it's easy. Because they'll go with Rabbi Yosef Karo, who says, it's fine, you don't need to kasher it. For the Ashkenazim, the Ramos said, you can't kasher it. Now, which problem does he have? Is his problem that really it's like earthenware, and you can't cashier it, like, period. You just can't. It won't work. Even after the fact, it won't work. Or is his problem that the other problem, which is in theory you can cashier it like metal, but we're frightened that you won't do it properly. I hope you see the difference between those two. That makes a massive difference. Do we say that glassware for Ashkenazim is uncasherable in any circumstances, or do we just say that in theory you could cashier it, but we're worried that you won't do it properly? And there's a difference of opinion in the later poskim as to what is the reason of the Ramah. Why did he say that Ashkenazim can't cashier glass? The Mishnah Brewer here in number 19 says he may be following the view that glass is like earthenware, and you can't even try. Don't even bother trying. It won't work. Glass is absorbs, but you can never get the taste out of it. That's one approach. Another approach, the Rav Yaakov Emden understands, and the Magen Avraham understands, no, the Ramah is just saying that in theory glass is casherable, it's like metal, but we worry that people won't do it properly. Why is that important? It's very important. Because let's say somebody did kasher glass, and they did do it properly. Did it work or not? You took your Pyrex dish, you dip it in the hot water, you get it out again. So if you understand, for the Sfaradim it's fine, you didn't even need to do that. For the Ashkenazim, if you say that the Ramah, Paskin, that glass is not kasherable, then you didn't kasher it. It's like earthenware. You can do that as many times as you like and it won't work. If you understand that the Ramah saying no, we're frightened that you won't do it properly, then after the fact then you did it, and if you did it properly, then clearly it did work. And that's quite important. The Magen Avraham here takes the view that actually it's the latter. The Ramah was simply worried that you wouldn't do it properly, but in theory, we Paskin the Ashkenazim, the glassware is like metal. In fact, number 22, the Mishnah Brewer brand, I'll bring you the bottom line in terms of the Psak in practice. The Mishnah Brewer actually brings down that I'm not sure we're even that worried that people won't kasher it properly. Why not? Because don't forget, the way that you kasher something is to apply the same degree of heat that you did when you used it. If people are happy to use their glassware with hot, whatever it is, then you only need that level of hot in order to kasher it. So what's the problem? Because people obviously do use their glassware hot if they use it hot, and therefore why would they not kasher it properly? So what does this come down to? What's the conclusion so far? So I brought you here on the sheet, before we get to the rest of the year, for Pesach, it goes like this. The Sfaradi Poskim, many of them are completely lenient. There are some that are strict and say, no, if glass was used in the oven with chometz inside it, then that's no good. It's only if chometz went on top of it. But many of them are completely lenient and say that glassware doesn't need a kashering. You can use it for chometz, you can use it for Pesach, you can use it for milk, you can use it for meat. It doesn't absorb. The Ashkenazim for Pesach are strict. We certainly don't kasher glass for Pesach. And in many cases, we don't use glass for Pesach at all. We'll see what that means in terms of Lamaisa, practically speaking. And there's a debate. If you did kasher your glass for Pesach, did it work or didn't it work? Okay, we'll get back to the bottom line soon. What about meat and milk? Are we bothered as much as we are for Pesach? And the answer is, normally speaking, we're more lenient with meat and milk than we are with Pesach. Obviously, chometz has its chumra, chometz is chayv koreis, chometz is not bottle. All of these halachas that we have with chometz don't apply to meat and milk. So what do Ashkenazim hold the rest of the year? Sfaradim is easy. If on Pesach they already say it's fine, the rest of the year they for sure say it's fine. But what about Ashkenazim? So again, here there's a difference of opinion. The Shulchan Aruch brings down in number 23, he says that if you store treif wine of non-Jews, in glass vessels, you don't need to kasher them afterwards. And the Ramah never disagrees there. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean the Ramah is saying that for the rest of the year, if it's not for Pesach, then we're fine. We agree with the Machaber. We agree with the Sfaradim that you don't have to kasher glass at all. And by the way, there are many poskim that understand. I brought them all in the footnote there. That in fact, that is what the Ramah is saying. That for the rest of the year, for milchiks, for fleishiks, you don't have to kasher glass. We agree with the Sfaradim. Other people say no. Again, here I brought the Magen Avraham that says no. It's just a special din with wine. We're more lenient with wine. But the rest of the year, really, we're strict. And Ashkenazim won't use glass for milchiks and then for fleishiks. And they preferably won't kasher it either. Although, if you did kasher it properly, it definitely works. And then there's a kind of in-between opinion. And this is really where our bath, using the bath is going to come in. There's an in-between opinion that says that Ashkenazim are machmir the rest of the year with hot. We're strict with hot. But we're lenient with cold. And that seems to be quite a prevalent practice. meaning most Ashkenazim will not use a glass Pyrex dish for a hot meat stew in the oven, and then take it out of the oven, give it a wash, and then use that glass dish for a hot milk thing. I think you probably go bananas if somebody did that in your kitchen. But for cold Ashkenazim, do they need separate milky conflation drinking glasses? Many Ashkenazim are very lenient about that because they say, look, it's not for Pesach, and really we may be lenient across the board for the rest of the year, and therefore it's not a problem for cold. And that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. And he says, actually, and then he brings in, that even for Pesach, the Ashkenazim are lenient with things that were used cold to do what we call Iru Gimel Yamin, 3 days of water pouring. Sounds like a ceremony for Sukkot. But what does that mean? And this is what he says. For glassware, where it's usually used cold, so then we stick it in the bath, we fill the bath with water, and then we empty it after 1 day, fill it again, empty after the second day, fill it again, we leave it for 3 days. So even if it's had something cold soaked in it for 24 hours, chomets in for 24 hours, he said, whiskey we're not lenient on, because whiskey is very harif, don't cash your whiskey bottles. But everything else, he said, we're fine, you can kasher because it's cold, and you can use gimel yamim, this iru gimel yamim, and he gets this from the Chai Adam, but there's a health warning there, which at the end, he looked in the Chai Adam in number 26, he says you can do this for Pesach. He says, uvamacham doichek, if you're in a stressed or needy situation, yesh lismuch al zeh, you can rely on this, kashering through soaking cold water in the bath. But if you can get hold of new glassware relatively easily, then the Ashkenazim are usually machmer on glass for Pesach, and you shouldn't break that. That's a very old established custom, which is a halacha. This is how we practice. We don't use glass for Pesach. Now, what does that mean today? Why don't you see young people putting their glassware in the bath? My mother-in-law, every year, puts her crystal glass in the bath for Pesach. Why? Because her crystal glass is very precious, very expensive, and she can't just replace it, and she wants to use her best crystal glass for Pesach. Today, most people take the view, look, you can buy glass so cheaply. Glass used to be very expensive. It's not anymore. Even nice-looking crystal glass is not crazy expensive. I imagine that my mother-in-law's set is probably very valuable, whatever. That's a different discussion, which is not for now. But you can buy glassware relatively easily, and therefore most folks can say that in our present world today, putting your glass in the bath for Pesach is really not acceptable unless it's really precious. If that's what you do, then that's fine. I don't want to interfere with your old standing minhagim. If you want to put your crystal in the bath for 3 days, then that's fine. Okay, fine. Now, bottom line, what do the contemporary poskim say? Let's talk about everything we've said. Let's summarize it. Let's talk about Pyrex and Duralex and Corel and Corningware and all that kind of stuff. Bottom line, where do we go? So, regular glass. If it's regular glass, the Sfaradim are generally very lenient. They follow the view that follows the view, the glass doesn't absorb and it doesn't need kashering, and they are often lenient for Pesach. Some for hot on Pesach, some less so for hot on Pesach, but certainly for cold, the Sfaradim are lenient. The Ashkenazi poskim for Pesach are strict, and they say that you cannot kasher for Pesach because we follow the view, like the Ramah, that kashrus doesn't work for glass, and maybe it doesn't work at all, because glass is like earthenware, or maybe it doesn't work because we're frightened that you won't do it right, but it doesn't work. Maybe for cold, for crystal, we talked about in the bath, but Pesach, Ashkenazim are strict. What about the rest of the year? Are Ashkenazim strict the rest of the year? That's when it gets interesting. Because some people, Rav Shmuel Vosner, ruled that, yes, we are strict, we don't ever kasher glass, and we certainly don't use it for milchiks and fleishiks. Rav Moshe Feinstein was very lenient, and said, no, for non-Pesach use, we can certainly rely on the opinion that glass doesn't absorb, and we can be lenient, maybe even like the Sfaradim, maybe even hot, which is remarkable. And other poskim said, look, it does absorb, but you can kasher it. And many people, therefore, if it's not Pesach, do follow the view for Ashkenazim, certainly for Sfaradim, they don't need to kasher it, but even for Ashkenazim, that it can be kashered. Some people are more machmir, if it's used hot, if it uses a klirishon. I looked up, by the way, on the Star K website, and I brought you some notes there. The Star K website basically takes the view that for milchiks and fleishiks, if you're using it on a klirishon, if you're using a bowl in the oven, then you can't kasher it. You can't use a glass bowl for meat and then take it out and kasher it and then use it for milk. You can't do that. But for a cliché-ni, for a cliché-ni, then it doesn't even need cash drink. He said the Ashkenazim are lenient. According to the Sarké, if you let how you have glass dinner plates, not ceramics, not china, glass dinner plates, you can use glass dinner plates for hot fleishiks, just wash them off, and then use them straight away for hot milchiks. That's remarkable. I don't think many people would do that, and I'm not recommending you necessarily do that, but it's a cliché-ni. It's not a kli rishon. It's not chometz. It's the rest of the year. Therefore, maybe we can be lenient and follow the views that the glass doesn't need to be kashered. By the way, I'll mention Rav Herschel Schechter says if you are kashering glass, certainly for Pesach, which we don't normally do, but even the rest of the year, he has a stringency that you should kasher it 3 times in hot water. I don't know if you've ever seen that. There's a view in the Rishonim that says that that even works for earthenware. Now, we don't pass him that way, but he says for glass, if you're not sure, that's something that one could do, kasher it 3 times, and I put that in the footnotes as to whether that works or not. What about Pyrex? Is Pyrex better or is Pyrex worse? So it depends on which way you look at it. Some poskim say, well, I don't know. What they said about glass applies to glass. Pyrex, Duralex, is different. Maybe that's worse, because I can't tell you that it's the same as glass, and I can't rely on the leniencies that we have for glass. Other poskim, perhaps most poskim, actually are more lenient, because they say, look, for Sardim, it's definitely fine. For Ashkenazim, if the worry is that we might not kasher it properly because we're worried about pouring water on it, so for Pyrex, it's less of a worry. No one's worried about the heat with Pyrex because it's made to withstand the heat. And therefore, there are definitely poskim that will say that if you kasher Pyrex, it's definitely better. Even for Ashkenazim, during the year, it's better than regular glass. What about Corningware and Corel? So I put on the sheet here, Corningware is a special kind of superheated glass. And Corel is made from different types of glass which are tempered in different ways. There are different approaches I brought you in the notes, the OU website, the Sarké, the CRC. Most people seem to understand that Corel is more like glass. And therefore, however you treat glass, that's how you treat Corel. Whereas Corningware is more like China. I don't know if they still even have Corningware. I haven't seen it around in Israel. But Corel's all over the place. And we treat it like glass, and we toivel it, just like glass, with a bracha drabanon. But nevertheless, for kashrus, we also treat Corel like glass. And I just basically brought you a few summaries on the bottom of the page there, what the Sephardi customs are, what the Ashkenazi customs are. Hopefully that was pretty clear. Bottom line for Pesach, I think bottom line for Pesach is Ashkenazim want to try and get new glassware where they can. Sfaradim want to ask a shaila as to whether you rely on the lenient opinions, you can just use it for hot if it's used for chometz. As I said, we talked a little bit about other Pyrex, Duralex, etc. But I think this is very fascinating. And just to sum up, one of the reasons that this is so interesting is that even though glass was known to the Gemara, glass was a used commodity, since the Gemara never directly addresses the kashrus question of glass, that's why we end up with this different approaches. You have these three different approaches in the Gemara. Glass is like earthenware, and you can't kasher it. Glass is like metal, and you can. Glass is sui generis, and it doesn't need it. And then you have these four approaches in the Rishonim, which follow those different views, which come into, it is very classic in the way that it's approached, which come into ultimately a machlokes between Rav Yosef Karo for the Sfaradim, and the Ramah of Moshe Isles for the Ashkenazim, where the Sfaradim are fundamentally lenient, and the Ashkenazim are fundamentally strict for Pesach, but potentially much more lenient for the rest of the year. Okay? And hopefully that gives clarity to how it works. You can look at the sources and the footnotes afterwards, and it'll give more detail. I just want to refer you to the very last footnote that I brought there, whereas Rav Menashe Klein brings down in the Mishneh Halachas that he was asked by a Rav who said his wife said to him that she wants to have separate glasses for meat and separate drinking glasses for milk. And he says, this Rav said to his wife, my mother never had separate glasses. If this was frum enough for my mother, why isn't it frum enough for you? This is a minag in our family. And Rav Menashe Klein goes through this. And there's like, well, shalom bias and kashrus, etc. Very often in Hilchus Kashrus, and let me just finish with this. If you actually follow the letter of the law, what the halakha says you can do in your wife's kitchen, she will never let you in the kitchen again, probably. Which might be actually what you're trying to achieve. But I don't recommend that for Shalom Bayis either. But women tend to run kitchens way beyond the letter of the law. And minag avoseinu biyadeinu, who am I to disagree with my wife? That's, I think, a fundamental bottom line for any share that I would give. And therefore, I do my bit and I do what I'm told, which is what I've succeeded in doing, maybe succeeded for many years. Okay, let's leave that there, because I hope that Zmira is on the line. Are you here, Zmira, anywhere? Oh, there she is. There we are. She's masquerading as Rabbi Shaw, but she's really not Rabbi Shaw. So I hand over to Zmira, who's going to explain to us what's going to be happening with the Shirim over the next few weeks. Please stay on the line, and Zmira will explain. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and it's very important that you all stay on right now, because you'll need this information.